what's wrong with my ears?
Hey, there's nothing wrong with generous ear holes.
Hey everyone, it's Tableside Mashed Potatoes. I'm Derek Ovinga, and I'm here with
Scott Irwin,
Peter Bishop,
and Jill Dews.
Oh, yeah. Nice. You're a natural.
So pushy.
We've got our second guest of the podcast, and this is Jill Dews, partner of Daughter Creative.
Hi, everyone.
Jill, did you kind of want to introduce yourself? You have this thing with your voice that's different from ours.
No, I'm Canadian. I sound very Canadian. I was born in Mississauga, but grew up in New Zealand. And I sound a little bit like I'm from nowhere at the moment, evidently. Don't really fit in anywhere, which is a shame.
I love the Kiwi and the Aussie accents. Derek, you do a pretty good Australian accent, don't you?
It's terrible.
Oh, come on, Derek.
All right, let me think. Aye, that's not a knife. This is a knife.
Oh, that's so bad.
That was terrible.
Every time that cracks me up.
Do you think I have an accent though? I think I've kind of lost my accent.
Are you serious right now?
Yeah, no, I go into meetings and I talk and I just don't. I used to kind of talk slowly so people could get used to it. And Now I've just totally forgotten. Is it still pretty strong?
Does anyone understand what Jill just said?
Yeah. You're like, yes. Good job. Maybe that's why I'm so happy over here. Everyone's like, good job.
It's not so thick that we don't understand you. So if anybody uses that as an excuse, they just don't actually understand what the hell you're saying.
Yeah, Derek's accent, I have no idea what he's talking about, but this is fine.
No, it's just a speech impediment.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Do the people like back home, do they think your accent's changed a lot?
They do. They hassled me. I was just back there. So we were in New Zealand we arrived on February the 22nd and we got back to Canada on March the 17th. You guys really burned the place down while I was away.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. I got back. We got back via Las Vegas. So we were in Las Vegas for the last week of our vacation. And I got back on the Monday and went straight into 2 weeks of, you know, self-isolation because I'd come from America. And that's it. I haven't seen my team since February.
Wow.
It's been a really
that's
long
crazy.
Time.
Dang.
But yeah, when I was home, everybody said that I sounded Canadian. So I think I'm doomed either way.
Say Eminem.
Eminem. Eminem.
See, yeah, you've lost it. I can see why they're like giving you a hard time with that.
Todd used to make me say shark infested waters.
Oh yeah, you're walking the line there for sure.
I used to make him say purple work shirt.
That's good too.
Very Canadian.
Purple work shirt.
Purple work shirt. I'm wearing my purple work shirt.
I have a friend who's from New Zealand, and the first time I'd met him, we're like, oh man, you're from New Zealand. Do you know the guys from Flight of the Conchords or whatever? Just stupid joke, because why would he know that? Of course he does. He went to high school with like Taika Waititi and... Yeah, because it's not really? That big.
No.
Yeah.
No. Wow. I used to work at BBDO in Wellington in New Zealand, and we used to use them for voiceovers all the time.
Oh, really?
Really?
They would just take any work that they could get.
So funny, because I remember whenever I would have to book a VO back in the day, mm-hmm. I'd always ask for somebody with a British accent or a New Zealand accent or an Australian accent. It doesn't even matter how they sound. Hey, they've got an accent. Works perfect.
Yeah.
So I feel like the competition in New Zealand would be brutal because everybody's got the same damn accent.
they want a Canadian accent.
They don't. They do want a Canadian accent. Yeah.
Jill, this could be your calling, dog.
I'll hook you up with some VO work.
That's funny.
I wanted to start by saying that I am a big fan of Tableside Mashed Potatoes as a concept for food as well as a podcast.
Oh, so Derek. Encourage him.
I love how the podcast came second.
I thought there would be Tableside Mashed Potatoes. So
we're working on that.
I apologize. I don't have potato curbside pickup.
Although idea,
you lose the experience if you have to pick it up. Like the whole experience is about being there in person.
Yeah. I mean, I did think about maybe like doing it, like going to the car and like mashing the potatoes at the car.
Curbside mashed potatoes.
Yes. Yeah, literally curbside mashed potatoes. But
yeah,
you know, I haven't pivoted the business yet.
Okay. So I'm a partner at Daughter Creative and a part owner. And I used to be the director of client services there, but recently kind of switched to more of a biz dev role, which is interesting because I never liked biz dev people growing up. Thought they were kind of like car salesmen, but I guess that's my job now. So I moved to Canada in 2010, but I was actually born over here. Spent the first kind of 10 years of my career at BBDO in New Zealand, in a place called Wellington, which if you ever go to New Zealand, don't let the people tell you that you should only go to the South Island because Wellington is amazing. Home of the Flight of the Conchords, home of many, many amazing things. Peter Jackson, Weta Studios, super creative city. It's kind of like Vancouver, so really harborside, really compressed city and super creative. So I got to work at BBDO over there, which was amazing, 2000 to 2010. So those were days of multi-million dollar TV budgets, five-star hotels. I got to go to Cannes one year, the advertising festival, and stay in a villa in Nice for a week. I got to go to lots of different countries with my job, and it was very cool. But it was also super stressful and busy, and I worked a million hours a day and had no life. And so eventually we decided, my husband and I, that we had to flee the country. We both tried to leave our jobs multiple times and kept getting kind of sucked back in again. So we decided just to leave the country and go somewhere else. So I used to work with a guy at BBDO, his name's Scott Sinclair, and he is an incredibly nice, smart digital strategist. And Scott was from Saskatchewan and was working over in New Zealand and had moved back to Canada. So one day I remember Skyping Scott and just saying we were keen to go overseas, and I had this Canadian passport because I was actually born here. And Scott said, you should go to Calgary. And he was back in Calgary and he was working at Critical Mass, where he still is now. He's a senior digital strategist there. And I had never heard of Calgary or Alberta, which is shameful for a Canadian. I did move to New Zealand when I was six, so I'm only kind of a little bit Canadian. But we looked it up on the map and he really sold us on it. Like, he told me about this outdoor lifestyle and the mountains so close, and it was going through this amazing boom with the oil and gas industry in 2010. And I looked up advertising agencies in Calgary, and there was a place called Trigger, and they had an opening for an account director. And 2 weeks later, I had a job. So I finally gave my proper notice at my job, and they tried to make me stay. And I said, no, I've actually really accepted a job, and my house is on the market, and I'm leaving. And 2 weeks after that, we left the country. So it was kind of a whirlwind departure. And I spent the first 2 years at Trigger and then got pregnant and went on mat leave. And then when it came time to go back to work again, I really wanted to do more digital. And so I started looking around and ended up taking a job at Uppercut, which was a website and app development company. And I took on the job of managing director, having never been sort of in management per se. So that was fun, learning spreadsheets and forecasting and investor meetings and all that stuff.
The name would have sold me on that job already. Oh. I love that name.
The funny thing was, they were the least aggressive people in the world. The team at Uppercut were just so lovely, and team of developers, lots of like headphones on, heads down, super lovely, nice people. And I loved it. And I learned a lot about website development and app development, which is what I wanted. Kind of did a little bit of coding myself, which was fun, and really, really loved the management side of it. And then I got pregnant again.
So selfish.
Yeah.
I have never done that in my career, just so you know, Jill.
You guys, you're so committed. So I went on mat leave again. And then when I went to go back, I took a job at Daughter. So Daughter Creative at the time was Jonathan Herman and Steph Kaczorek. So Jonathan's the designer, Steph's a copywriter. And they had been freelancing together for a few years off and on, had worked together at Wax many years ago, and then decided that the freelancing was going really well, and they should make a business. So they had made Daughter and incorporated it about 3 months before I started. And it was going really well, but they just didn't like the account management side. So I said to them, how long does it take you to respond to an email? And they were like, oh, 2 weeks. And I sort of was slightly horrified and said, oh, okay. So I joined as the third partner there. So copywriter, designer, suit.
Babysitter.
And we kind of went from there. Yeah, the babysitter.
Jill, you mentioned, I think this is interesting. You mentioned going into kind of lead generation or more kind of like the sales side of things and your opinion of it at the beginning. I always think it's interesting because I always kind of sales to me was the wink and guns and learning a lot. Like there's a great book To Sell as Human, where it's talking about how, you know, we actually sell all the time as humans. We are constantly selling. There's nothing bad about it. It's just certain people and certain things have kind of gradually made us feel like it's a bit of a dirty word. Mm-hmm. How's it been going? What made you kind of want to switch over?
Yeah, I actually love it. I will come back from a meeting and people say, what have you been doing? And I'm like, devin' some biz. I don't know, when you're selling something that doesn't feel like selling, it's so much better. Like I used to dread pitching. I'm quite a shy person, which a lot of people don't know. But I used to hate that sort of dog and pony show where you get up in front of a client and you point to slides and you have, you know, proprietary processes that you're talking about and they're not really your slides. But nowadays when we pitch, we basically sit around a table and we talk like this. And it feels like as a little agency, it's like if we were that client, this would be how we would work with them. This is very authentic to the process of how we would work every day. Whereas those formalized pitches, it's how you would present to maybe a board of directors, but it's not really how you work day to day. So it felt really staged and forced and kind of inauthentic. But when you can just talk about something and have a conversation, it's great. And I feel like clients seem to like it. I don't know, it feels way more real.
I totally agree. And I think that's sort of the awakening. That's the new progressive way, I think, of a number of like top leading creative firms that are talking about conversations over presentation. This idea that you're going to go in, your strength is going to be able to facilitate a conversation as opposed to stand up in front of a PowerPoint presentation and tell someone how you understand their business and you're going to solve all their problems for them. It doesn't really work like that. And that 80s Madison Avenue sort of legacy of creative pitches, I think, is just, it's going the way of the dinosaurs, and it's much more collaborative, much more integrated. We don't really know. We're going to talk like this and we're going to work together and we're going to figure it out.
Yeah. So in the sort of more formalized, bigger agencies, I think you would take a client brief and you would go away for a couple of weeks and you would literally come back and stand at the front of the room and turn around a board and say, ta-da, here's the idea. Let's go and produce it. And that just, I mean, it's so easy to miss the mark. And it's just not authentic. Like we will never know as much about a client's business as they do. So it's so much better to say, we've come up with this kind of track that we want to explore. We want to check with you. Is it okay? And they might say, oh, we totally see how you got there, but no, so-and-so is doing this, or we've been there before and it didn't work. And you can just cross it off the list and you can, I don't know, it's so much easier to be focused. So we try and present early and often.
Have you seen any pushback from your clients who just, you know, they don't have time to be engaged constantly, where they just kind of want to, you know, agree on a brief and then just let you do it?
We really have. So we have a set of ground rules for clients, the clients that will work best with us. And one of them is basically don't go dark on us. It's like, we've got this, but the we is us and you. We can't do this without you. And it's a waste of time and money. And it's setting people up for disappointment if you're not prepared to be involved. So clients who say, I'm too busy, come back to me in 2 weeks and show me where you're at, that just doesn't work with our process. And I think it can be demoralizing for our team and disappointing for them as well.
You know, having your background working for BBDO and, you know, these big, large multinational type agencies where there's a bit of a gated process where an accounts person will be more or less the person-to-person touch point with the client. And sometimes on large accounts with large agencies, that's a bit of a necessity. But have you noticed a bit of a difference on smaller projects where, you know, these really frequent early and often type check-ins where you have, do you tend to have the people who are doing the work get the FaceTime with the clients as well so that, you know, they're able to walk through a concept or an idea and really sort of rationalize the work that they've done rather than playing telephone game with, like, you know, a bunch of
20 stakeholders. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Like I really think that nobody presents the idea better than the person that came up with the idea. So I used to feel like I needed to do more, but I think going in and setting up the relationship and then letting the creatives speak directly with the client is the best way to do it. Like, I'm just there to make sure everyone's in the right room. I've always thought of account management as basically clearing the roadblocks to creative. So you're creating an environment where people can do great work, whether that's, you know, what people need internally or what your client needs to know to have confidence so that they're going in with the right sort of frame of mind. But then the creatives are there to sell the work. Like, I'm not really selling, I'm just kind of laying the groundwork.
Inherently, creatives do need that kind of presentation side of them. Like, it's a big part of being a creative is you're going to constantly be selling your work. Where I find it falls down a little bit is when you start getting developers to present or you start getting data scientists to present, and you really are rolling the dice at that point, because, you know, the presentation skills, if you believe in the idea that, you know, the marbles sometimes all get crushed into one area of talent, and perhaps leave other areas, I find sometimes, you do need that interpreter in the room to kind of manage the relationship side or even just the social cues side of things.
I completely agree. I think that whole, sometimes it's kind of a lack of like not reading a room, and sometimes it's a lack of confidence. People go too deep. And there's a quote, I'm going to butcher it, but it might have been Einstein. It's like, you should be able to explain your concept to a kindergartner. And if you can't, then you're not doing a good job, mm-hmm. which is kind of a letdown sometimes, because you want people to go, oh my God, that's amazing. But sometimes you want them nodding along going, of course, that's the right answer. Of course. You don't want them to be startled. You want them to be nodding the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, surprising people is not the way that it works anymore. You're kind of getting there together, and then they're going, I can't imagine why we've never done this before.
The best part is when they go, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yes. And you're like, okay, great. Yeah, exactly. We'll take it.
Yeah, perfect.
We're all on the same page.
Well, and it is interesting when you think of the sophistication of clients, like, some of them get iterative process. And then some of them, we've had times when we're displaying wireframes and they're like, but we thought our site would have more color to it. But we can live with this. And the fact that they're actually even willing to go with what you're showing, you're like, oh my God, like, you're being so nice.
That speaks a lot. Yeah. That word nice as well, that is kind of my code word almost. We have a real philosophy about leadership over diplomacy, and that's taken me a long time to get on board with. So by nature, I'm a bit of a people pleaser. So I would go in and a client would say, we need this thing and we need it yesterday and we need it for $5. Yes, we'd love to help you. And knowing how to say, you know, well, that's unreasonable. Your pressure doesn't have to become mm-hmm. my pressure. And protecting your team first, I think, is really important. I think as a suit, it's very easy to go in and promise the world and then, you know, you come and dump it onto somebody else. Mm-hmm. So I think that idea of, you know, being nice, and clients who are nice as well, sometimes they think they're being so lovely, but it's actually, we'd rather just hear the truth. Like, we've all been there. We've all had our work kind of torn apart. We can take it. I'd rather sit around a table and have an honest conversation. Like, if it doesn't hit the mark, the faster you get that out of the way, the faster you can move forward.
Oh, the thing that drives me nuts the most is presenting something and you just get like accolades and smiles and, you know, whatever, like, oh, this is great, this is great. And then they take it back. And of course, there's always going to be feedback after the fact. Mm-hmm. But it's just this slow drip to the point where, like, a week and a half later, you realize they didn't love any of this. They just didn't feel comfortable saying this to you. And it would have saved us. We would have been a week and a half ahead had you just been able to have an honest conversation, right?
And I think it's really tough for a creative team as well, who's in a presentation like that and then gets the feedback that, you know, no, we didn't hit the mark. So I think exposing creatives to that work is really important for them as well. Shielding them from that is doing nobody any favors.
Yeah.
It's like, we just got to, if we didn't hit the mark, we just got to mm-hmm. move forward and understand why.
This is design, not art, right? Like, creatives need to be able to develop a ability to take feedback, not internalize it, but react to it and go, okay, yep, that's something I hadn't thought of. We're going to work that into the next round, you know, and not take it personally.
Yeah. Completely agree.
So we have a term called the lovable asshole, which I think is pretty funny, where it speaks to that hey, you know, you still have to maintain a relationship, but you also have to be firm. Sometimes some of that spills to a project manager, where the project manager's job is to protect the team and the account manager is mm-hmm. there to protect the relationship. Do you find a split? Mm-hmm. Have you seen that split before? How does that take an effect in your career?
There comes a real time when clients respect that lovable asshole. I think Steph Kaczorek, who's our creative director, is our lovable asshole. She is like, she's amazing. She will go into a meeting and she's got a saying as well. What is it? Show them what they want, tell them what they need. So, you know, if a client comes and says, I need to see this, of course we do it, but we are not afraid to go in and say, that's not the right thing to do. And I think it's tough to do that. The first time you do it, you have these kind of butterflies. And then it's like, people want that. Like, they're hiring you because you're an expert and they want you to be decisive mm-hmm. and take a leadership role. They want the reassurance, like, this is the right way because this. You know, I know that this is the right way to go, and we would, you know, we would put ourselves behind that. I think there comes that point as well when you need to know when to back down. Like, if it's just not going to work, you need to say, okay, you know, we disagree, but you know, you have your reasons for this, so let's move mm-hmm. forward this way. But yeah, that there's that balance between being nice and being strong and being decisive, but still collaborative. It's such a fine balance.
It totally is.
Do you find there's a moment, because I know I've had many of these in my career, where you're battling for good work and you know it's the right solution, and it's kind of like death by a thousand cuts. You gradually get beat down. And then there's this point where you just completely are, okay, what do you want? Where do you want me to move the mouse? How high do you yeah. want this thing to be? Whatever you say, I'll just do, because I just literally want this out of my face. Have you had moments like that in your career where you're just like, I give up with this thing, or have you just fought tooth and nail all the way through?
No, God, I've given up so many times, and I've thrown people under the bus, unfortunately. I have said to clients, you can come and sit with the designer and look at color palettes.
Oh, no.
And then the designer's like, no.
Yeah.
And I've seen the clients sit there for, you know, an hour basically exploring shades of blue while the designer slowly goes crazy. Oh, I know, bad suit. Sometimes you kind of have to realize, you got to know why that's happening. At some point you let it go, and then you probably don't work with that client mm-hmm. so much anymore. One of the things that's like, when we start a client relationship, it's like, what do we think good work is? Do we think good work is getting it out on time and on budget? Or do we think good work is something that you're still going to like 3 months down yeah. the track? So it's aligning on that.
I was thinking this might be a good time to give a nice shout out to Cabin. One of daughter's clients is Cabin, and Jill was kind enough to drop off a 4-pack of Super Saturation. So this is the first time I haven't had a Negroni thing since we started, and I'm happy to say this is one of my favorite beers. So thank you, Jill.
We have to say what Cabin actually is. So it's a craft microbrewery based out of Calgary, and one of my favorites, but it's so hard to pick a de facto favorite, because really, in the last 5 years, there have been so many great craft beers that can. And yeah, to Peter's point, this is normally a Negroni-based podcast. It's sort of the fuel for our conversation, and I'm really enjoying a little bit of the, you know, switching it up a little bit here. I'm actually drinking an Annex, which is also affiliated with Daughter as well, is it not?
Yeah, we have three breweries. We're very lucky. We have Annex, Establishment, and wow. Cabin. So we think the three best breweries in Calgary. And Cabin actually just got named Alberta's Brewery of the Year.
Oh,
the,
nice.
The Beer Awards, which was so cool. We were meant to go to Red Deer of all places, for the gala celebration.
Ooh, luxurious.
Instead, Hayden and I watched it on our couch in sweatpants.
That's even better.
So, yeah, even better. Yeah.
I got to say, too, the Cabin design is hands down one of my favorite beer yeah. designs ever.
Oh, it really is.
So cool. I actually feel like I'm going back to 1970 and looking at my brother's beers and wishing I had one. They're so good.
We were saying that before we even knew Daughter was working on the design. Because I remember we were at Beer Fest or something like that. And I was like, oh yeah, that would look good on a t-shirt.
Yeah. Because as designers and creatives, we're going through there going like, I like the taste of that beer, but their branding is meh. Now that the branding, because honestly though, you go into a beer store or liquor store here, and you're just absolute information overload. You're just inundated with, oh, I've never seen that before. Oh, where did that come from? And as a designer, I have a particular sort of aesthetic that resonates with me. And cabin and the other one is 88. Both of them really just really resonate. And so, as you're looking through the dozens of options, you're looking at this going, yeah, I'm going to try that. I'm going to try that. And cabin is just one of those things where both the branding and the packaging and the options and the flavors and the products and stuff just completely resonate. And it's one of my go-tos.
That's so nice to hear. We have one person at Daughter who's done every single cabin can so far, and that's Ben Goff, and he is a superstar. Nice. And I was actually standing with him at Beer Fest once, and somebody came up to the cabin booth and said, who does your design, some granddad? And it was like, no, this guy.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. He wasn't even like born in the 80s or 70s.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again, Jill, for coming on to the podcast and kind of telling us a bit about yourself and Daughter and kind of your processes in terms of client management.
No worries. That was super fun. My first podcast.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It feels like you've done like a dozen or more.
Oh, a dozen or more.
We're glad we can lower expectations for you.
I'm quite old.
Yeah, we've really brought the bar down for you. So it should be easy to step over.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, expectations can only get higher than this.
Well, you guys, I wish you all the best. I know that like everybody's going to come through this differently. So yeah, let's kind of have a drink in person when this is all over. Make me a good Negroni, one of you.
Done.
That's been Tableside Mashed Potatoes. I'm Derek, and we'll talk to you guys later. Scott, Peter.
Thanks so much, Jill. Bye, everybody.